Well, I think the words tonight from the third chapter of Colossians are very appropriate, chapter 3, but quite apropos. Our fundamental concern is to determine how we connect with God. When all is said and done, that's what the deepest consideration is. The reality of God is communicated to us, actually, as I said this morning, in the Spirit. I don't think you can prove God at all. In fact, the moment you would prove God, you would make him smaller. If you can make a judgment about him in your own little fleshly mind, you have become greater than he. I mean, at least in theory. There's no way to prove God. In fact, proof is a very elusive commodity, proving things. I suppose in the test tube you can, but the scientists stay away from the word pretty much and use the word evidence instead. Because all through the history of science, they've been continually had to reverse their thinking. Even in Einstein's later years, he was sort of out of touch with the scientific community because the scientific community introduced a curve factor to his theory that he didn't necessarily accept. And he said, God doesn't play games with his universe. Someone said, don't tell God how to run his universe. So, we don't know. We have our theories about life and so forth. It's wise to kind of float. The things which may be known of God are manifest. The things that are invisible, they have to be known by the Spirit. Only in the Spirit can we have a sense at all of God, because in 1 Corinthians 2:14, he says, then the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit, neither can he know them, for he scarcely discerns. So, I don't care how many evidences you may stack upon stack, the only way those evidences are going to be made certain to you is by the Spirit. And, of course, life is so much of an illusion. And the more we dig into it, the more illusory it becomes, where things are not what they seem, in spite of Longfellow's plea not to think that way. Things are not always what they seem. You know, people are always happy to, or let's say always quick to try to prove God by, let's say, the beauties of nature. That's a common thing for Christians. Look at what a wonderful sunset God made and so forth. But then you confront the hurricanes that wipe out villages and you have to take another look. That's why nothing really remains stable except by the Spirit within our spirits, the Spirit of Christ. And that's where your platform of faith comes in. You have to hold on to that. That is an extremely important concept, that the platform of faith is in our spirits and holds steady, remains secure. But our own human trust is a vacillating thing. The Jewish people were wont to say in the days of the Holocaust, how could God do such a thing? The tragedies and catastrophes of the Jews in Germany were beyond human understanding or endurance, why God would do that, allow that kind of bestiality and brutality and so forth. I just reviewed a book for the journal called God and Evil, in which the author says we have to confront that. He's a Jewish theologian. He confronted it in ways that were questionable, which I questioned in the book review. Took him to task on it because he misused his own language. Because his effort to handle this Holocaust thing, it's not so difficult to handle why does God allow a volcano to erupt or something like that, but to handle the kind of bestiality that was true of the German concentration camps and the attitude toward the Jews is beyond all capacity of the human to really handle and figure out. So the only way that I can reference it, considering as I did this morning many other things in the society around us, is by recognizing that the human brain simply doesn't know how to put the pieces together. I try to sort of help people get rid of the illusions so that they won't get disappointed later on, you know, like the precious Heavenly Father concept where God has to do things that no human father would do. A human father were an oncologist and would have a cure for the cancer of one of his children, for example. We'll just assume that that was a possibility, that he could handle it, he could do something. Maybe a surgery or something would take care of it. But he would say to the son, well, I think I'll let it go because you need a lesson. And no father can do that. But God sometimes has to do it in terms of things that are part of this incredible universe of ours, totally inscrutable universe. So we are left with the only substantive approach as assuming that the Spirit of Christ within us handles those things within us. So we hang on to Christ in spite of it all, not even because we rationalize and say, well, after all, the judge of all the earth shall not the judge of all the earth do right. And people use that text a lot. And in a rational way, you might advance that or say that. But ultimately, the energy of faith within us goes beyond that, beyond any kind of reason. You can't say, I believe in God because he is this and this and this. You certainly can't say, I believe in God because he did this and this and this, because then you find the counterpart in different quarters of society where they also had things done that were rather beyond the natural. So the bottom line is the gift of faith to our spirits is the thing that holds us steady, and the many vacillations of the human mind are secondary. It's nice to feel comfortable with God, but sometimes it's difficult. And I don't know how to reference it. The spirit, in that respect, speaks louder than the flesh. The flesh says, like Job, why? What are you doing? Doesn't understand it. The spirit just keeps going on and on. And we wake up the next morning and Christ is still with us and we're still with him, maybe reluctantly. There are people that are reluctant in their identification with Christ. He doesn't come in, contrary to many quarters. He doesn't come in with a great sweep of emotional fervor with salvation. Though C.S. Lewis said that the Lord had to drag him in kicking and screaming to the kingdom, and, you know, in a sense, against all rational thought, something in you holds to Christ in spite of it all. You come to genuine faith when you doubt yourself or your faith. Then you have to work through it. But even then, all of your rational ideas come apart at the seams apart from the Spirit. Because you're faced with the question, how in the world do we really know that the God of the universe is dealing with us? Has anything to do with us? That's a philosophical question. I'm much given to philosophical questions. That's why I've come to the basic point that we know because of the spirit within us that goes beyond our human rationale, beyond our human doubting and all of that sort of thing. But if you get a little miffed at the Lord, by all means, hang in there, because he's just, you think your ideas are so grand and marvelous, and he's thinking of them as childish prattle, you know. And, go ahead and muse and think and doubt and figure all you want. You're not sinning, but in the end, your hanging on to Christ will be by the grace of Christ within you. And that's where you'll hang on to your day. You always pray, I always pray the Lord give me the grace to handle what comes up. There's a lot of things come up. And our stability in the midst of the battle is only based upon the Christ within us that holds us steadfast in spite of all the conditions to the contrary. When everything's going against you and everything is topsy-turvy and you still hang on to Christ, that's the work of the Spirit. But to complain and groan and moan and scream at the Lord or whatever you do is the flesh, but not something that's going to get you thrown out of the kingdom. So I can say, I said things in the meeting this morning that wouldn't go over very well in the average Baptist church, at least. Certainly wouldn't go over in a Pentecostal church. People on the victory trail there. I've just never been able to drop a blinder down between me and reality and say, isn't it lovely, you know. Bought a picture, painting of a lighthouse. All it is a lighthouse, a light, a bunch of rocks and the storm. Very inspiring picture. But I'll hang it in my study. Your life gets reduced to rocks and storms and a lighthouse. And as long as you recognize that you're there, you're all right. You know, if you try to get something more out of it than that, you'd be in trouble. But that's what it is. Rocks and storms and lighthouses. I wouldn't put that on anybody else. But my job is to be a lighthouse. But the only way the light keeps going is by the Spirit of Christ, not by my brilliance. That's when you can kind of relax and be at peace with Christ. When you can separate between all those things of the flesh, your judging of the flesh, and the work of the Spirit. So a lot of things that people are tempted with are just in the flesh. If you're out in the steamer on the high seas, people need the lighthouse. The people are heading for the rocks. You know, the people that are trying to make sense out of their lives and so forth, they want a lighthouse. They need it. The only way it's going to keep going is if the Spirit keeps the light burning in there, which He will, because He says that He who commanded the light to shine out of darkness has shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the presence of Jesus Christ. So that's what I've been saying. That's exactly what I've been saying. The energy of the universe is ours. Through the presence of Christ. And that's what keeps our light going and not our brilliance. But he goes on to say what I've also been saying. We have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us. We're just a bunch of clay pots. If you ever think you're more than a clay pot, you may have to learn some lessons. But that gives us more reliance on Christ. But it also gives us the latitude to move ahead in spite of the flesh and to retain our identity with Christ in spite of the negative things that might surround us. The great issue to all of us is, how do we connect with God? That's a big issue. Whether God exists or not is immaterial if you can't connect with Him. And I mean connect with Him stability. There are a great many groups that believe that they're only with Christ as long as they behave themselves. And when they get out of line, he turns his back on them. And that's an idiotic thing. Remember I said to you before, it's like the guy with the diving bell, diving suit. Deep sea diver. He's down on the bottom. He's got his support group up on the surface. And he says makes some comment while he's walking around down there that they don't like, so they cut the line. All right for you, buddy, goodbye. People think that's the way God does it. You get a little off base and he cuts the line. The only way we keep life is by the presence of the Spirit within us. And otherwise we're like little children. That's why I have to give you the great peace and comfort to realize that you plug along in your childish idiocies and fantasies and so forth, but the reality of your lives eternally is the Spirit within you. Now Paul has a classic statement. He says, if then you are risen with Christ, seek the things that are above, for Christ sits on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above. Now the word set your affection really means to let the tendency of your thinking be. The patterns of thought. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth, for you are dead and your life is hid with Christ in God. He didn't even challenge that fact. They were dead. He had a lot of complaints about the Colossian people, but he never let them believe that they were therefore not with Christ. He had suggestions for them. All the things he says in chapter 3, which we will get into shortly, all of these things are things that ultimately, if you don't follow his advice, you get into trouble. But they don't get you thrown out of the kingdom. See? The Greek word there is phroneo, which means the habit of thought, the pattern. The word affection is not valid there. It's just the tendency of your thinking. See, the tendency of some people's thinking, for example, is money. Their whole life is given to that. And with some people, it's physical prowess. And they go completely to seed on the subject of bodybuilding. You know, you've known people like that. They get into that. So he's saying, not set your affection on. He's saying, let the tendency of your thinking be on things above. It's a better expression, because you don't have to think every minute some holy thought, see? You can still think about your job, and you can think about this and that, but the general pattern of thought. At any rate, the fundamental point is that the Spirit does take care of that, because the direction of your mind ultimately is toward the meaning of life in connection with eternity. You know, and we look at our lives, I think, even by the Spirit, we all tend to look at our lives in terms of the eternity factor. In the light of eternity, what does any of this really mean? But I think we have the latitude there to say that it's wise, as a result of these verses, it's a wise thing not to put too much weight on the material realm, on the world. But I've always said there's nothing wrong with enjoying these things. So you have a nice car, you have a nice home, or whatever. You enjoy it as long as you don't put too much weight on it. Because, as we've seen in the Oakland situation, how tenuous these things are. And you can have a wonderful life. I think of that in connection with certain public figures who have a wonderful life in a very fleshly sense. All of a sudden, everything falls apart on them, see? They get cancer. They're right at the peak of their career and they get cancer. Or they fall into other problems. I suspect that the whole world of entertainment is shot through and through with uncertainty and with disillusionment and disappointment and so forth. Can you imagine setting out on a career in acting? Think of all you'd have to do to settle that career, and then even when you make the big time, so-called, and you have a series, That's about the most stable thing in the industry. You get on a series, and it goes for several years or whatever, but then it gets canceled, you know. How insecure they must be in the acting profession. You never know whether you're going to work again after you've finished a picture. Even the people at the big time, they're bright lights, and all of a sudden they're out. If you stay on the bottom, at least you don't have very far to fall. Well, you know, people have simple jobs, and they earn enough to keep the body and soul connected, tenuously, but they connected. They earn enough to do that, but they have struggles, financial struggles, and they might think it would be wonderful if, you know, everybody wants just $100 a month more. That's the general consensus. You ask people, how much more would you need just to really be able to kind of pay your bills and be comfortable? For everybody, I read a survey on it. Everybody wanted $100 a month more. Of course, the people that had $100 a month more wanted another $100. You know, you never can be certain in this financial world. So you are content. Well, Jesus said it, having food and raiment, let's be content with it. So not that you can't have more than food and clothing, but it's all very iffy, you know, very insecure. So your security is in Christ. That's why it says, let your mind, let your pattern of thinking be on things above. And if you have food and clothing, you have to be content with that.